That leads to our final case this morning, number 23-1111, Cloud of Change, LLC versus NCR Corporation. Okay, Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Paul Hughes for Appellant NCR. There are several issues in the case. I tend to focus on three. I'd be happy to begin wherever the Court may like, but I'd start with first that we think the patents are plainly invalid, which the PTAB recently concluded. The second point I'd make is the District Court invented a new infringement theory, applying Akamai 5 to system claims after post-trial briefs were filed. This theory never went to the jury, and it's wrong in any event. And our third point is there was a blatant misuse of entire market value evidence in assessing damages. So for these reasons and the others in the briefs, we believe that there should be reversal. But I'll start with invalidity unless the Court would prefer me to begin elsewhere. Turning to invalidity, we don't think the District Court provided any substantive reasoning to really wrestle with the invalidity position we presented. Our expert worked through very substantial evidence demonstrating how Wojcik meets each of the structural limitations.
Well, okay, but your problem is that the jury rejected the evidence.
Well, Your Honor, to the extent that it's evidence of the structural limitations, I think what the Court said in Mobile Media Ideas, this was a 2015 case, quote, conclusory statements by an expert are insufficient to sustain a jury's verdict. And when you look at the passage that my friend quotes from Mr. Chatterjee, this is appendix pages 91.
Could you just back up so we're clear about what was allegedly missing from the prior art? As I understand it, it's different with respect to the 012 and 640 patents. With respect to the 640, it's the subscription module, and with respect to the 012, it's this wherein clause about using the internet, right?
That's right, Your Honor. I think that's right. Although, with respect to the 012, the wherein clause using the internet, the only evidence that COC presents that's missing is Mr. Krauss saying in conclusory fashion, it's not there. He doesn't actually look at the Wojcik reference and provide any substantive reasoning as to why Wojcik doesn't disclose it. And in fact, that's really the essential invention that Wojcik describes, is an integrated system where there's information going from the programming module to the kiosks via an internet connection via a server system. And it's described in the abstract.
I thought the evidence that you presented to the jury on this was that Wojcik described using a LAN and not the internet.
Well, I think Wojcik is pretty clear that it's a communication system where you have a central server, and that it goes to the ultimately it goes to the kiosk device, and it has that communication mechanism. I don't think there was any material distinction that was drawn between a LAN server versus an internet connection. I don't think that's an argument that Mr. Krauss ever pressed.
But is my statement not correct that what you presented to the jury was that Wojcik shows this using a LAN, not the internet?
No, I think Wojcik is broader. I mean, Wojcik talks about a central server providing the software media updates to local servers, and I think that is the communication.
Okay, but in terms of what you presented to the jury, am I mistaken? I thought that what was presented to the jury was that Wojcik showed providing it through a LAN and not the internet.
Your Honor, I don't.
In the obviousness analysis, what was the difference between Wojcik and the claim?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that was an obvious distinction that was really presented to the jury as being any sort of meaningful distinction. Because
what was the distinction?
I'm not sure there was, Your Honor. I think at Wojcik pages 75 and paragraph 75 and 76, it talks about an administrative tool loaded on a remote computer so it can be configured and to make the communication to the local server. So that notion of having a remote server then interacting with the local kiosk via a remote connection is made. I don't think there was any notion that there was a material distinction between LAN or an internet connection. I think that would be obvious in any event. And again, it goes back to Mr. Krauss doesn't provide any substantial evidence because there's no substantive explanation as to why there's any sort of plausible distinction. But, Your Honor,
what site were you going to give you earlier? You were going to give a site to what you viewed was conclusory testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. It's Dr. Krause, or sorry, Mr. Krause's explanation. It appears at appendix page 63, 64 to 68. That's the portions that they rely upon. When you look at what Mr. Krause says at 63, 64 to 68, he's just asked, is it present? And he says, no, no, no. But what this court in Mobile Media has said, that sort of conclusion without any explanation doesn't qualify as substantial evidence. But if I could turn to the 640 patent, as the court noted, the only distinction there is the notion of a subscription service. I think there are two core problems with that. One's anticipation, because as we demonstrate with the Enron Schreiber, if your distinction is going to be a claimed functional limitation, that functional limitation has to add some structure to distinguish from the prior art. And here, there's no structure that a subscription limitation adds. But even if we were wrong about that, the Machado reference, the entire point of the Machado reference is taking the prior art point-of-sale terminal systems and adding a subscription service to it. And Machado, very clearly on the face of it, as we describe, provides the motivation for why you would make that combination. And the motivation that we describe in the briefs and is on the face of Machado is that large and medium businesses can afford that to purchase that kind of technology because they have the capital base in order to do so, but small businesses can't necessarily purchase the infrastructure, so it's advantageous to small businesses to be able to lease it rather than to purchase it.
Why was the jury not entitled to adopt any contrary testimony presented by the expert?
Ultimately, I don't think there was any substantial evidence that would support that, and I think it's pretty difficult to say that that it's not obvious that if you have a product that can be sold, can be leased. Again, we're looking at conclusory testimony from Mr. Krause saying, well, I disagree, but there's no substantive weight as to why he disagrees. And I think it's just a correct point to say that it's obvious to one skilled in the art, but even apart being obvious to one skilled in the art.
This is the same thing where you're saying that the expert's testimony is conclusory and therefore it can't support.
Yes, Your Honor. Ultimately, our position on invalidity that I have to convince the court to win on the balance of invalidity, but I think the courts agree.
It's a tough burden that you have on substantial evidence in a jury verdict.
I don't disagree, Your Honor, but what this court said in Mobile Media, which is essentially our point here, I think is correct. It's not enough to go to a jury where all the plaintiff's expert says is, I disagree. If that is the sole substance of the testimony is there an element missing? Yes, and then the other side actually shows where in the prior art that element is. That is not the kind of dispute that is properly put to a jury because there's no substance behind the opposing expert who says, I disagree. They have to give reasons. And the court has repeatedly said a conclusory statement is not substantial evidence. May I turn to infringement? I'm happy to spend more time on validity.
Yeah, why don't you turn to infringement? And if we were to rule for you on infringement, do we need to reach invalidity?
No, Your Honor. Infringement would be a sufficient basis to resolve this case, either infringement or invalidity. Damages.
Do you still have a counterclaim of invalidity that's pending?
Your Honor, that's a good question. I don't think that's been resolved, but I will go verify that. I don't have
that. You did file it. You filed a counterclaim seeking declaratory judgment of invalidity of the patent, right?
I believe we did. Yes.
Are you willing to drop that right now if we find there's no infringement? Because under Cardinal Chemical, I mean, I don't know. Under Cardinal Chemical, we as a court have to resolve issues of validity if there's a counterclaim, right?
Your Honor, that is a good question, and let me verify if we have an outstanding point, but I think I can say, and I think the court has accepted this before, if the court were to find in our favor on the basis of infringement, we would be content with winning this case on the basis of infringement, assuming it's a reversal and not a remand, and I do think that would be an appropriate basis for the court to resolve this matter.
And for your infringement argument, I understand your argument to be that the district court was correct in concluding that it's the user that makes beneficial use of the system. Where the district court got it wrong was in finding that because there may have been direction or control of one step or one part of the system, that is not sufficient under Centillion. It has to be that the accused infringer directs or controls the use of the the consumer's use of the entire system.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that that's all accurate. I think the court agreed with us that Centillion, as Centillion appears on this face, does not support this verdict. And the district court, again, in that portion of its decision, fully agreed with NCR. The only way that the district court was able to affirm is to incorporate the broader infringement standard from Akamai 5 and to essentially graft that onto Centillion. And I think that doesn't work for a couple of reasons.
The theory being that NCR controls the customers?
Well, no, it's a broader theory than that, Your Honor. I think that the Centillion theory is really a command-control theory. It says that if one actor...
No, I understand what the Centillion...
Of course, Your Honor.
I'm talking about the Akamai theory. He says that NCR doesn't directly infringe the claims under the Centillion theory. The customers do it, right?
That's right.
Right. So then he goes on to say, but... looking to Akamai, I find that NCR controls the customers, and therefore there's infringement under Akamai. Is that what he's saying?
I think that's what the district court is saying. I think that analysis is a little difficult, Your Honor.
Is it specifically that customers control that NCR controls the customers' hookup to the internet?
Well, no, they don't. I think he finds it's more under the Akamai encouragement prong about conditioning participation activity. He's looking at that Akamai's expanded
Was he really looking at the Akamai at that point, or was he expanding Centillion?
Well, I think what he was doing was taking the Akamai standard and adding it to Centillion to expand Centillion is what I think the court thought he was doing. But the first problem is the jury was never given an instruction beyond the Centillion theory. So this new theory the district court came up with was never requested by Cloud of Change. Akamai 5 was never discussed in the case in any party's briefing until the district court sua sponte added that in the decision on the JMALs. And it's just too late at this point to add in that theory.
Page A14, the court says, unlike Quest and Centillion, NCR directs its customers to perform by requiring its merchants to obtain and maintain internet access.
Yeah. And Your Honor, I think this is where...
What does that mean? See, because I think this might be an error. Because he's looking at one component of the system, internet access. And even if it's true that NCR directed its customer to perform, maybe maintaining internet access isn't enough. It has to be that you would, under Centillion, direct and control beneficial use in the entire system.
I think that's entirely correct, Your Honor, but let me add one additional point. Under Akamai 5, it is a control or direct test. There's a disjunctive there because under Akamai 5, control is not strictly required. The condition of the benefit is something less than control, which I think Akamai 5 expressly recognizes that the test is more flexible than control. Centillion, though, because of the distinction of a system claim and the singular nature of that act, requires the actor who is the direct infringer to be able to control, command that all elements of the system be put into service. That's what's lacking here.
So you have two things, control versus direction or control. I mean, control and direct versus control or direct, and also what is it that's being controlled?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's exactly right. And I think this is very different than Akamai 5 because the pragmatic considerations that gave rise to Akamai 5 following the Supreme Court's decision in Limelight.
Akamai 5 is a method claim.
Yeah, it's a method claim, Your Honor. And the issues that Akamai 5 resolved in method claims aren't present in system claims. And when one looks to Centillion, Centillion's pretty clear of saying, look, the folks who use this are the customers. The customers use a system
supplying
of
the software doesn't make you an infringer.
What's that, sir?
Supplying the software doesn't make you an infringer.
Right. And but what Centillion suggests is it leaves open the possibility of secondary liability for those who supply the software. You can make an inducement or a contributory infringement claim. You know, you have to see how that shakes out, but you have a secondary liability claim that you can pursue. The problem here is, as Cloud of Change recognizes, they've waived those claims expressly. They only brought a direct liability theory. That might work as to a customer, but it doesn't work as to NCR. Just briefly, you know, if I can touch on damages, or I'm happy to spend any more time on infringement. The entire market value rule, there was no ability to access that for two independent reasons. One, there was never a connection between the claimed patented features and the entire value of the product. And just to jump to the core issue, what Cloud of Change's contention is that if you have a system claim that takes a prior art system and then adds something, you can, in order to access entire market value, take all of the elements of the system, including everything that was in the prior art. That's just not correct, though, because as Gerritsen, the foundational apportionment case from the Supreme Court says, you have to look not to the entire claim system. You have to look specifically to the thing that's the improvement over the prior art. Here, per our invalidity contentions, we don't see any improvement over the prior art, but even spotting that there is some improvement over the prior art systems, there has to be a demonstration that it's that improvement that creates the entire market value of the product. That has not been demonstrated, which shows why entire market value, a very narrow exception which rarely applies, should not have been allowed here.
There was some evidence submitted, correct? It was kind of scant, but...
The Strawhecker report had those four factors about those four things. The problem is none of them, there's no nexus between those and what is the improvement over the prior art. Those four factors that are described exist in all of the prior art systems. So what Cloud of Change says is, well, because we took a prior art system and, you know, added something on top of it, we can claim everything, including what was, because of a system claim, you know, the patented features include, you know, all of this, but that's the wrong way to look at it. You have to look at what is the specific improvement over the prior art in order to access the entire market value, and I think that was the fail here.
Okay, I think we're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you,
Mr. Selinger.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Jerry Selinger for Appley Cloud of Change. I'm going to respond to the 3 points counsel raised, and unless the Court has a different view, let me do it in the order counsel raised them. So, as far as invalidity, our expert, Mr. Krauss, did provide evidence as to reasons why each of Wycheck and Brown was deficient and did not anticipate. And, by the way, counsel several times refers to global media. I don't believe that was cited in either of the briefs, but Mr. Krauss explained that Wycheck, from appendix pages 9361 through 9366, Wycheck used a LAN connecting the POS terminal and the web server, while the claim required an internet connection. And having the web, having the system on the internet was an important aspect of the invention. Second, Mr. Krauss pointed out that Wycheck required in-store servers, while the patent, well, our patent claims neither claim in-store servers, and in fact the common specification teaches those are not required. And that's at appendix page 97, which is column 5, lines 41 through 42. And then Wycheck also does not meet the vendor subscription service language, which isn't just
that's
three.
The only differences to the 640 patent, right?
Those are three. Those are the three differences.
But there's two different patents, right?
No, but right. Yes, that's right.
Just focusing on the 640. What are the differences?
Okay, so for the 640, it's the vendor subscription service hardware. But it's not just those three words. It's that clause which has interconnections and hardware software interactivity. It's not just buy or lease a car. It's far more complicated. And Mr. Krauss made those.
Where does he talk about how it's complicated?
Pardon me?
Where does the expert talk about how it's complicated?
How it's complicated? Mr. Krauss's testimony for Wycheck is from A9361 to 9366, and now NCR says, well...
That's for the other patent. What about where is the testimony from the expert on the subscription service?
In that case, it would 9397 to 9400, Your Honor.
Which volume is that in?
Pardon me?
Which volume of the appendix is that?
That's going to be volume
4.
4, thank you. It's right on the cusp. NCR made the same conclusory arguments before the district.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Where's his testimony that a subscription service wasn't something that was known or inherent?
So you gave the site to 9397 to 400. Where specifically in there? 9397, I don't think even has expert testimony on it.
Give me one second, John. So at page
seems to be objections to the jury charge.
Page 9366. Question at line 11. Does Whitecheck disclose a vendor subscription service? Line 12 answers not once.
Is there anything about why it wouldn't have been obvious to modify WOSIF to provide a vendor subscription service?
There's no testimony from NCR's expert above and beyond the you can lease a car, you can buy a car. That was it. And so the patent is presumed valid. The other side didn't offer any evidence about the details of the modification, and Mr. Krauss identified things both in Wojciech and in Brown that were not in the prior art. And let me just point out.
Yes, Ron. I understand what you're saying. You're saying that the patent requires a specific method of a subscription service that's not in the prior art, but I don't see your expert as saying that there's anything unusual about the subscription feature.
So I'm not saying that's a method. The patent claim requires the web server as a vendor subscription service, and what our expert did is identify differences between the claimed subject matter and the prior art, because the other side was arguing anticipation. And in response, Dr. Chatterjee, their expert, argued that things were there either inherently or expressly. He admitted not everything was there. And the jury, his inherency argument really isn't traditional patent law inherency. It's you can lease a car, you can buy a car. Therefore, everything's...
That's not inherent, because it's not necessarily separate.
That's right. Now, as far as somebody being conclusory, if I ask you, does that patent show a widget? And the answer is no. I don't think that's conclusory. And let me say, if NCR had thought that the patent actually showed something, it had the right to cross-examine.
Okay, but did he say it wouldn't be obvious to use it with a subscription service?
My expert certainly did not. And all their expert had on obviousness, their expert failed to say anything about motivation to combine at all. So, And in its reply brief, NCR pointed to appendix page 91-81 to say, yes, we did. But that page actually was its expert opinion on inherent anticipation, not motivation to combine. At appendix pages 9401 through 9403, I think Mr. Krauss further elaborated about why the evidence would not have shown obviousness of the prior art combinations.
Maybe you should turn to anticipation unless my colleagues have further questions on invalidity.
I was just going to say we don't have pages 9401 to 9403 for what it's worth.
I apologize. I'm sorry, Judge Dyke, could you repeat the question?
Why don't you move on to infringement?
Let me do that. I think NCR unfairly characterizes what the district judge did in the record it had before. When we went to trial, we had NCR as the only defendant. We didn't accuse NCR's customers of direct infringement. We had abandoned indirect infringement claims. So
you didn't argue that the customers were direct infringers, then how do you come under Akamai?
First, I think this is important, what the district court did...
No, answer my question.
Well, we didn't argue Akamai.
You didn't argue that the customers were direct infringement. How do you come under Akamai?
We argued Centillion data and direct use infringement...
So you didn't argue Akamai.
Under 271A...
Did you argue Akamai?
We did not argue Akamai. We argued Centillion data. And we argued direct use infringement based on Centillion data itself having...
Centillion says supplying the software doesn't make the supplier of the software an infringer. Maybe it could be induced, contributory, but it's not direct infringement, correct?
That's right. But what Centillion did do is it looked to see, before it said there was no infringement, the court looked to see if Quest on its own had control of any of the elements that were missing. And so what we did is NCR had all of the elements except the internet connection. And
Centillion says supplying the software doesn't make you direct infringer. That's what happened here. They supplied the software, right?
No, there's far more than that, Your Honor. What the record shows.
What did they do besides supply the software?
Well, the NCR had a whole back office service where it provided, it took input from customers, dealt with that input, then returned that input to the customers. The only thing that was missing, because NCR also had the software, what was missing was NCR didn't provide an internet connection, but the district...
Did NCR provide the one or more point-of-sale terminals?
Did NCR provide the...
One or more point-of-sale terminals?
The district court found they did, or NCR controlled that, and NCR did not.
Where did they find that NCR controlled that? Let me not.
And NCR, so in appendix page 18, going over to 19. NCR argues that it did not supply or control the majority of POS terminals. It cannot directly infringe. Appendix 18, 1-8. The heading sub 3, substantial evidence supports the jury's infringement finding for the, quote, POS terminal, end quote, limitation. Did you find that, Your Honor?
Which sentence were you referring to on this?
I was just starting with the front, and I was pointing out that, first of all, NCR admits that it supplies or controls at least some of the terminals, but then it argued about the majority. And...
okay.
So that was there. In fairness to Judge Albright, what he did in his analysis was he did a centillion data analysis by looking at our trial record, and he concluded that under centillion data, substantial evidence supported infringement.
On page 12, he says the accused infringer did not control the accused system, the customers did.
But,
and it isn't until it is no moment that NCR supplies the software for the customer use.
He did, but then he goes on pages 13, 14, and 15 and provides much more context. And the way I read his first sentence is, keep in mind that Centillion had both Quest merchant use, and which was personal, where the question was whether there was personal infringement, and the alternative in Centillion was, if there wasn't personal infringement, whether there was vicarious infringement, because one or more of the elements could be attributed under the principle of vicarious liability.
Okay, just to be clear, so what you're saying is you're not relying on Akamai theory here, correct?
That's correct.
And you're saying this comes under Centillion.
That's correct. And if I can just add, what Judge Albright did is he did a sanity check, say, I conclude under Centillion data that there's infringement, but I'm also going to look at Akamai to see the new vicarious liability, the expanded vicarious liability, as had an analogous to what Centillion data did when it first looked at some method claim language to conclude there was system claim or could be system claim infringement. And so what Judge Albright did was he considered that Akamai 5 was an additional, quote, viable theory. And he used that to confirm he was correct in finding infringement under Centillion data.
So, applying Centillion, I'm having a hard time understanding why it is that there would be infringement here. And the reason why is because, just like in Centillion, the court said, Quest in no way directs its customers to perform, nor do its customers act as agents. While Quest provides software and technical assistance, it is entirely the decision of a customer whether to install and operate this software on its personal computer or data processing means. And I think your situation is exactly the same, with the exception that if you're going to use the system, you should hook up to the internet.
So Judge Albright made some specific findings based on that. In Appendix 14...
No, he doesn't make findings.
J-Mall didn't make
findings. The jury made findings.
That's correct. I stand corrected, Your Honor. But what he looked at was the testimony of... He looked at the training video testimony. He looked at NCR's Quinn, who testified that items in the silver merchant agreement are things NCR is requiring of the merchant. That's Appendix 8757. And Mr. Quinn also said NCR requires its customer to provide internet access.
Just one internet access isn't the whole system.
That's correct. But we proved NCR directly used itself all of the other elements.
But no, that was not the theory that was adopted in the JML decision. The theory that was adopted was that the user is the one who, that the consumer is the one who uses the system, not the accused infringer.
Your Honor, let me ask you to take another look at appendix pages 14 and 15. Because
the court says that NCR's merchants put the accused system into service, and therefore, right?
Well, that's why he didn't find NCR had itself committed personal direct use infringement.
Okay, but NCR doesn't care whether its customers use the software or put the system into use. I mean, they sell them the software, right?
No, they don't. They sell software. They sell hardware. They have back office system. I mean, NCR's silver merchant agreement is a complicated agreement that provides much more. This isn't off-the-shelf software, as may have been the case in Centillion. This is a whole package of hardware and software. And the loose end here was with the internet connection, then as you asked about, Judge Stahl, the terminals, but NCR complained about those in its JML motion, did not appeal that here.
Okay, I think we're out of time, unless my colleagues have any questions. Okay, thank you, Mr. Selinger.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hughes, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. On infringement, we heard Cloud of Change doesn't advance an Akamai 5 theory. They're resting on Centillion. I just point out Judge Albright agreed with us that as Centillion is adopted, he even agrees that JML is appropriate. We think that's the right outcome. On the 640 patent, I just point the court to appendix page 9,199 to 9,200. That's the evidence from Dr. Chatterjee where he explains the Mashad reference and the basis to combine and what Mashad discloses. There's just no rebuttal to why that would be an obvious combination. Finally, we talked about damages. If the court reaches it, we think that the damages is wholly inappropriate for the reasons in the brief. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the court may have.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Thank you, Mr. Selinger. The case is submitted. That concludes our session.